Time for Choke Points, brought to you by Online Trading Academy. Just because the Alaskan Way Viaduct is coming down in a few months doesn't mean the state's going to stop inspecting it for cracks or unusual settling, and Chris is going to explain why.
Yeah, the Alaskan Way Viaduct closes for good, as we know, on January 11th. The state will then start dismantling it. Drivers have just under 3 months left to drive on the old structure, and as long as there are cars on it, the state is going to make sure that it is safe.
We all know that it needs to come down, but they always check it and make sure that it continues to maintain its structural integrity until that time occurs.
Now, the state's Dave Sowers says the agency has a responsibility to check it, even though it's going to be coming down here in a couple of months.
As long as the road is still operating, as long as it's carrying traffic, we're committed to operating it safely, and that includes an inspection, and it's time for the inspection.
Laura Newborn with the Washington Department of Transportation says the viaduct will be closed southbound from Friday night through Monday morning to allow for that inspection and some continued prep work for the demolition. The northbound lanes are going to be closed for about 12 hours on Saturday. Newborn says engineers will be looking for the same things that they have been since the Nisqually earthquake 17 years ago.
Any signs of cracking, any signs of cracks growing, any signs of movement on the bridge, and our engineers are committed to making sure the road is safe and operational, and if it was not safe, they would not reopen the road. That has not happened since 2001, thankfully.
I mean, should they find something unusual this weekend, those engineers would not allow the viaduct to open. That's kind of been the case in every one of these semi-annual inspections. That's not expected, but of course you never know what they're going to find there. I asked Newborn if the engineers are getting a little misty in preparation for this final viaduct inspection.
It is the most inspected bridge in the state by far, and it's the 33rd time that this road has been closed for inspection. I should say that we do inspections all the time, but this particular inspection requires a closure. I think they will just be very happy to see it go.
Yeah, I think a lot of us will be. Demolition on the viaduct will begin once the new tunnel opens to traffic. A lot of the debris from the viaduct is expected to go into the Battery Street Tunnel. It is being filled in as part of this project. Once the viaduct is down and all the debris removed, the city of Seattle will begin the next phase of this project, which is the complete makeover of Alaskan Way. When that is complete in about 4 years, Alaskan Way is expected to handle a lot of the traffic that used to use Highway 99. The city expects that the new tunnel, combined with the expanded Alaskan Way, to basically handle what is the current load on the viaduct, which is about 110,000 vehicles a day. The new road there on Alaskan Way is going to have two general purpose lanes in each direction, a dedicated bus lane. There are going to be bike lanes and wide sidewalks. It's going to be a very nice boulevard of about 7, 8, 9 lanes wide there through the area.
That we'll get 4 years from now.
Yeah, 4 years. Well, 4 years from whenever the viaduct is completely out of the way.
Yeah. I remember that when we settled on using the tunnel, building a tunnel to take the place of the viaduct, the idea was it would switch over and then suddenly, you know, then things would remain normal. But it sounds like there's going to be essentially a four-year transition while they finish the boulevard.
Yes, and that kind of coincides with what the city calls the period of maximum constraint through downtown, where we have so much construction going on and then so much road work going on. But yeah, I mean, it's a four-year, I mean, this project is, we're basically in the middle of it right now, if you think about it. Sure, the tunnel's open, yeah, but then a major component of that is bringing back some of the capacity on Alaskan Way and making it a little bit more approachable, and it's supposed to handle a lot of traffic it's an 8-lane boulevard at least.
But the idea that opening the new tunnel will be like, you know, clearing out the beaver dam and suddenly the creek can run again, that's not going to happen.
No, it's not. It is going to be a very interesting transition. The traffic patterns, as we know them in Seattle, are going to change significantly because of this. Because if you think about it, there are no exits to downtown. So not only will you have people who are avoiding the tunnel because they don't want to pay the toll, that's one component, but then you have people who, say, used to get off at the exits on the viaduct to get to their office buildings downtown. Well, where are they going to go if the tunnel's no longer, you know,
take I-5
viable for them? And then, or you take the tunnel and then you swing back around to get into downtown, which adds more pressure on the Mercer side getting into downtown from the north, or from the stadium side coming back up from the south.
You think people are seriously, because I mean, when we have this weekend closure, you're going to see it'll be a weekend, you'll still see a traffic impact on I-5.
Oh, completely.
And if that happens on a weekend, I can only imagine what will happen on a weekday unless people take this Seriously.
I know, and that's why I've been banging the drum, and I'm going to continue to. I don't think people realize just what kind of a global impact this is going to have on the entire region getting around downtown as people figure out what their new route is.
Yeah.
It is going to be a significant change to the way we do business getting in and around the city.
Now, people are going to be able to drive along the waterfront even while they're going through the takedown process?
Yes.
So they're like going to...
So right now
they're just going to jackhammer it piece by piece.
Yep, or? It's going to come down.
Chunk by chunk. Big kingdom explosion.
I don't know. I don't believe so. Yeah, that would be fun, but I doubt the businesses that are right next or the outbuildings right next
to it.
They wouldn't like it.
No, they wouldn't.
But that's why they switched the traffic just last weekend from under the Alaskan from the viaduct back to Alaskan Way. They want to make sure they at least had those four lanes operating while they take down the viaduct.
Live for the United Nations, CBS Foreign Affairs analyst Pamela Falk is on the line. I just read the article that was published detailing just exactly what happened to Jamal Khashoggi. Explain to us why this is the thing that crosses the line with Saudi Arabia. They've been violating civil rights for decades. They've been fighting this war in Yemen, which threatens to starve between 2 and 3 million people, I hear. What made this rise to the top of the charts?
This rose to the top of the charts because a mountain of evidence is pointing to the fact that Saudi security agents murdered this Washington Post columnist and U.S. resident, Jamal Khashoggi, at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. Now, there was the passage in the United States of the 2016 Magnitsky Act that has been adopted by other countries around the world, and it's designed to bar any kind of government offense if they murder or detain or torture any person. And so it can be a foreign citizen as well as a citizen of the host country. And apply sanctions to them, and that supersedes and gets rid of the problems of sovereign immunity. Now, what you're going to hear in the next hour is three major UN human rights organizations calling for the UN to conduct an international independent investigation, because there has been so much skepticism, Dave, about the idea that Saudi Arabia, in addition to Turkey, but is basically investigating itself. And the UN did this after the assassination of Benazir Bhutto. The UN has a history of this. And so what these human rights groups are about to ask is for the UN, at the request of Turkey, to do its own investigation. And so the human rights abuses against journalists in particular around the world is soaring. And that's why it's gotten to the desk and to the attention of the rest of the world. There's also the issues that relate to U.S.-Saudi relationship in terms of the war in Yemen, countering Iran's influence, and the consistency of the U.S. moral compass in terms of applying what it applies to Iran or Myanmar or Burma or other countries, also to Saudi Arabia.
Now, why is it that what's Turkey's interest in this? How do they stand with Saudi Arabia? Why are they leaking this information?
Well, Dave, that you have hit the nail on the head. That part, I think, is a little bit quirky. I have asked everyone, including Turkish diplomats and Saudi diplomats and U.S. diplomats, and it's not totally clear, except the speculation is that Turkey wants a better relationship with the United States. It's why they returned the U.S. pastor, and it's what they're looking for is protection against the sense that they allowed this to happen in their territory, because it was the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. And so they have had their own human rights abuse problems. And so this way they get to take the higher ground and curry favor, or so they think, with the United States by sending out the evidence. And that's what has sparked the journalists. It's really not coming from intelligence agencies, the journalists around the world to expose piece by piece, and especially from the leaks of the Turkish government, of how gruesome and specific the audio that Turkey claims to have and has shown U.S. government officials, although they didn't show Secretary of State Pompeo, that shows this seven-minute murder and the dismemberment, all of the gruesome details.
Now, I only got 30 seconds for this, Pamela, but if you can explain why. And I read Khashoggi's last column. It's very mild. It's a call for more transparency, just for Arab governments to let people hear what's actually going on. Why would they do what's so threatening about him that somebody would do this?
Basically, the direct attacks that he has made in the past against the Crown Prince. And the Crown Prince was on a global PR campaign to show his reforms, that he was going to let Saudi women drive, that he was going to change the scenario, that he was going to clean up human rights. And then all of a sudden, all the links are to him of the agents who were involved in this. And so at least one is seen as a very close ally of his. And so part of the issue is what does Saudi want? They don't want people who have been insiders, who have a lot of credibility, turn critic and journalists, to be out there saying, no, they're not telling the truth. And so apparently this was upfront and personal for the Crown Prince, and the U.S. intercepts show that they did intend to detain him in some way and bring him back to Saudi Arabia where they could throw him in jail. And they've done that with several others. So he's not the first, but this seems to be, he was too smart to go back and try to, and he was able to avoid it. One of his best friends, another journalist, said they've been doing that to him for a while, trying to get him back, offering him lucrative jobs and saying, oh, please, you'll be happy here, and then intending to throw them in jail. So they're trying to quash dissent is the bottom line.
CBS Foreign Affairs analyst Pamela Falk. Thank you, Pamela.
Absolutely, Dave.
Time for the Sports Insider, brought to you by your Western Washington Toyota dealers. And now here he is from that gourmet banquet of sports at the 710 ESPN, our own Danny O'Neill. Congratulations to the Sounders. They've made the playoffs for the 10th straight season.
Yes, orange wedges for everyone.
What?
So you get at halftime of soccer matches, orange wedges.
A little juice box. Huh?
Yeah, Capri Sun.
I've never actually seen them get orange wedges.
Oh, that's for the most part what soccer players play for.
Really, that's it?
It's certainly not the goals or the excitement. You get some good exercise and you get orange wedges at halftime.
You knew what you were signing up for when you brought this up.
Yeah. I did not know that. So let's talk about
also a participation trophy.
It's the shield, right?
No, that's the supporters' shield.
You get the supporters' shield.
That's for having the best regular season record.
Yeah. And then if you win the whatever it is they're in now, you get the World Series.
MLS Cup.
The MLS Cup. You get a cup.
Yeah. That was
the real cup.
Yeah, all of
medal?
The different things there. All
it's
of the different plastic. Awards that they've got for people. Like, oh, you didn't win the championship,
show some
but
respect.
At least you get the supporters' shield.
For once in
shield.
Your life.
No.
Show some respect. Now.
It's soccer.
So now let's talk about that game of inches, baseball.
Now that is a sport you can get behind.
That's where if a fan touches somebody's mitt, then it's no longer a home run.
Apparently. And there's a very firm rule in baseball, which is the fan reaches into the field of play.
Yeah.
It's fan interference, and you can award the team an out, the team that's on defense, that's in the field. If the player reaches into the stands, all's fair in love and war. The stands, the player has no more right to the ball than the fan does.
Really?
So you can reach into the player's glove and rip the ball out if it's in the stands.
And does that then take the out away from the player?
Yes, that's correct.
What?
Yeah.
I had no idea. That's my new goal.
It's like a
fumble. Catching a fly ball.
Yeah.
The other team immediately takes the field and goes on offense?
It's exactly right. If you go up and you catch the ball and you don't come down with the ball because someone reaches into your glove, home run.
Now that's exciting. Has that ever happened?
Well, it kind of happened last night, and then the umpire, including Cowboy Joe West, who's got one of the biggest egos of any umpire out there, said, no, The fan reached into the field. It's not a home run. Mookie Betts was the fielder for the Boston Red Sox, and he jumped up. Jose Altuve, who is a mighty mite of the mightiest proportions, hit what was going to be a two-run homer in the bottom of the first. And it did not look like Mookie Betts was going to make the catch. The fans certainly impacted and prevented his ability to have a shot at it. And then they're like, nope, that's a home run because he reached into the field to play. They went and looked at the replay for 3 minutes, 13 seconds and said, yep, sure enough, it's an out.
Huh.
I watched it. I could not tell. I don't know how you say that was fan
interference. And there's no way a coach could go back and get, you know, like in the NFL where they can...
A challenge? Right. No, because they went and looked at the replay.
It.
Yeah.
That's
AJ Hinch even said afterwards, my only option is there. Do I want to make a stink and get thrown out?
Why didn't they?
Well, because he was...
It's
you
the
get
playoffs,
throw, you
man.
Wanna, you want to get... It's not going to have any effect.
Oh.
It's just you get to throw a temper tantrum for a temper tantrum.
I thought that's why we watch sports.
Well, now I would have... been thrown out. I probably would have been thrown out before the instant replay review.
Right.
But I would never be hired as a major league manager.
Is this a rule that needs to be changed?
No, they just need to enforce it right.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. Or have umpires with functioning eyesight.
Here we go again. Here we go. Now the Danny's 10 best heckles, but let's say it for another time.
How do you get such a square head
in
that round
NFL.
Mask?
We're running out of time.
What's
going
to happen to the Seahawks ownership now?
Well, that's a big question. A lot of the owners, they had their big powwow yesterday, and a lot of owners were asked about that. And I think most said they wouldn't be surprised if it was sold. That they may expect it to be sold. Nobody knew for sure, and there was no announcement in that regard. But everybody said that they expect the Seahawks to remain in Seattle, that would not be something that would.
So who's the head honcho now?
The head honcho of the Seahawks?
Yeah.
Well, Jody Allen his sister. Vulcan Sports is the entity that owns it. That's the holding company, in effect, which also owns the Blazers and the Seahawks. You have a president in Chuck Arnold who has just moved to that position, who is the chief executive there on the business side, and Pete Carroll's at the top of your football operations.
Howard Schultz is probably wringing his hands going, I won't be the most hated if somebody moves the team.
I will lay down. Oh, I thought you were going to say Howard Schultz could buy the team. I was
no,
like,
no.
That will not be allowed.
He's waiting to be dethroned as the most hated
Howard
No,
Rollins,
it'll stand?
Because, no, nobody would be so gutless and spineless as him. It's really, he's really a once in a millennia type villain that really just doesn't have the stomach to hold his own city hostage. So he's like, here, you do it and take it away from the city.
What about Ken Behring?
Ken Behring at least didn't live here. Like, he didn't pretend to be a Seattleite. He lived, like, Northern California, San Ramon area. He was a real estate baron.
So
Howard Schultz has the gall to still say he's a Seattleite. Like, he should at least in shame move from the city. He lost our team. He should have to leave, too. Can we excommunicate someone from the city?
You're not going to be able to buy a Frappuccino anywhere in America now.
Oh, no. Look out.
That's all I'm saying. Thank you, Danny.
You bet.
From Danny Westneaton, the Seattle Times, the story of Amanda Ogle. You ever gotten your car towed? My car was towed once.
No, never had that happen.
I parked. It was, you know, how could it ever happen in Seattle? Or you'd park in a place and then find out there was a no parking sign hidden by a tree somewhere, right? Anyway, I got it back, but the bill was something, I forget what it was. It shocked me.
Predatory.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. Yeah, because they got you over a barrel, right? So Amanda Ogle had her car towed, but in her case, it was particularly painful because she was having to live in that car. She's homeless. She told us why.
I used to be a vet tech years ago, and physically I couldn't do that anymore. So I was a receptionist, and then I had to have neck surgery, and I was still having complications from that. So I had to quit my job. I lost my apartment. I couldn't stay with my mom because she lives in a senior housing building. So I was staying at a shelter during the night, and I could stay at her house during the day. And my car was parked at her house when it was stolen.
So the car where she sleeps is stolen from in front of her mom's house. So she calls the towing companies to see if it had been towed. Then she called police, reporting her car stolen. And it turned out they found it parked in SeaTac at an apartment complex. And it had been towed to Dick's Towing in Tukwila because it had been in the apartment complex for too long. So she goes to Dick's Towing, but she can't afford the $427 towing fee.
So I called them, and they said it would be $427 to get it out. And I explained my situation. I couldn't, blah, blah, blah. So they said, well, come down here and get some paperwork so you can go to court to see, you know, what the judge says about that. And in the meantime, I would call them and just cry and explain my situation, you know, and they were just being real jerks to me. So it doesn't matter. And usually if people go to court, the judge says you got to pay it anyway. So, you know, what's the point, really, is what they were saying to me. And the last conversation I had with them, I said, okay, well, I've filed this paperwork to go to court. I'm jumping through all these hoops. I will, you know, see you guys and go to court. And the last thing I said to the gal on the phone is, like, if you sell my car before we go to court, you guys are going to be in trouble. And 2 weeks later, they sold my car at auction.
They sell the car. Now, she mentioned the papers. Apparently, the rule is that if you dispute the towing fee, they give you automatically this paperwork that you can fill out. Most people don't do it because the towing fee is only rarely reduced. So, okay, so her car is gone. She has no place to sleep now. So she files the court papers, she gets a hearing, and the tow company does not show up at the court hearing.
I guess I'm lucky in a way because most, you know, legally, you know, they towed it legally, but he, you know, explained my situation, the homeless, and it was stolen. He just said, okay, Lincoln Towing, you need to give her car back.
So she gets a ruling from the judge, you got to give her car back. Meantime, according to Danny Westneat, Lincoln Towing kept running up the towing charges. So that they reached a total of $21,634. And that charge is still there. But she's got her car back. She represented herself in court, but got assistance from the Northwest Consumer Law Center. That's where Kevin Eggers works. And what ticks him off is that Lincoln Towing has a towing contract for the city of Seattle. And yet their attitude would rate, what, about half a star on Yelp? He doesn't think Seattle should be proud of that.
You really need a homeless person's $400 that she doesn't have. And they said, you know, yep, we do. And this is how you get it out. And then they hang up on her and she'd call back and try to get the forms. They gave her the wrong form initially. Then they called her back and said, you need to come get this form, but it's actually at a different location. So you have to go over there and get it. She's like, okay. And then she calls and she finally fills out the form. She goes to court. She tells them she has a court order. And she calls and says, hey, don't sell my car. You know, don't, you'll be in trouble if you do. And then they just keep handing her around. They'd hang up on her. They'd transfer to a voicemail machine that was full, you know, and they treated her with such disrespect.
Now, we haven't heard from Lincoln Towing on this yet, and I have a feeling they get sob stories all the time because nobody wants to pay their towing fee. So we can't rush to judgment, as the president would say. However, it does seem unfair that people who do nothing wrong get screwed anyway. There's about, I read the 911 stolen car reports every day. We get about 10 stolen cars a day in Seattle and maybe two or three recovered. So net, there's a fair number of people whose cars are gone. Should they be held responsible if their car gets towed from wherever the jerk drops it off and they have to pay a towing fee? Somehow, that just doesn't seem right to me. Do you let your kid walk around with toy guns?
Yeah. Tom has doesn't do it a lot lately, but they were big into airsoft guns. And those, I kept telling him, look ridiculously real, and we set down a series of guidelines for how you use those in public.
So
would
he ever be walking down, ever walk through the neighborhood with a airsoft in his hand?
Oh, yeah. Completely. They used to have airsoft battles in the green space behind our house, and there would be five or six kids walking down with real-looking long guns and handguns in their waists and whatnot. Yeah, and in fact, I was actually at the gym once in Snohomish County where there was a standoff going on underway at a Chevron station across the street with five kids, not my son, in the back of a car, all with airsoft guns that the cops thought they were real, and they had them at gunpoint. And they kept telling them to drop the guns, and the kids kept telling them, they're not real. And the cops kept telling them, we don't care. We don't drop them. And, I mean, it led to like a half an hour standoff. And the kids were just kind of they were driving down the road looking at the guns they had just purchased from Big Five.
How would the cops know the guns weren't real? Did they have the pink
Some do. Muzzle? Some don't. Some of the airsoft guns you buy don't have the orange tip on them.
Wow.
Or you could take them off really, and they do look ridiculous. The only way you know is when you grab them and you realize they're incredibly light. Though some of the long gun airsoft guns are made out of metal as well. Including one that my son has. But yeah, I've told him nonstop. I mean, those look real. And to an officer, they look as deadly as the real deal.
Well, here was the 911 call. This happened Saturday in Columbus, Ohio.
Two little kids, and this guy brandished a gun. I know it had to be a gun.
Okay, so the cops roll, and there are these two kids. One of them has a gun, and one of the cops is Peter Casuccio. He draws down on the kid. Here's what he told the local ABC station.
As soon as I stepped out of the car, a young male wearing a gray jumpsuit with red stripes pulled what would appear to be a gun out of his waistband and threw it off to the ground.
He says all he had was an instant to react.
It's really what it is. It's a millisecond. And you see the gun leaving his hand, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw it bust into a million pieces once it hit the sidewalk. And that's when I realized it was a BB gun.
BB gun. So the police released an edited version of the body cam video where this cop has just drawn down on the kid. He's dropped the gun. The cop realizes, oh, my God, almost shot this kid. And the cop is ticked off. So he lectures the kids right after the gun drops.
This is getting kids killed all over the country. Because you know where I was at? I'm driving with my friend, okay?
Yes, sir.
And we're talking, and then all of a sudden a gun run comes in. So we're driving down the road, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And they call in and they say, there's two young male blacks, one with all red pants and a blue sweatshirt, and one wearing red and black. They look really young and they just flashed a gun. Okay, do you think, listen, here's the deal. Okay, you had to show somebody because how the hell did they know you had it?
I ain't showing nobody. I know, I was just holding it like running like this.
Okay, you can't do that, dude. In today's world, listen.
Yes.
That thing looks real, bro.
I'm so sorry.
You should be sorry, and you should be scared.
Yes, sir.
If that was a different cop, bro, he killed me. And you put it out, you should have just, I got it right here.
No, I didn't want to shoot out there.
I know you didn't want me to shoot. You think, how old are you, boy?
11 years old.
How old are you, young man?
13.
Do you think I want to shoot an 11-year-old?
Yes, sir.
Do you think I want to shoot a 13-year-old?
Yes,
do I honestly look like the type of dude that wants to shoot anybody?
Yes, sir.
But do I look like the type of dude that will shoot somebody?
Yes, sir.
All right. I pride myself being a pretty bad hombre, right?
Yes, sir.
Because I gotta be.
Yes, sir.
Don't make me.
So I'm curious. So in your neighborhood, you see two kids walking with what looks like a real gun. Is the first thing that comes to their mind, oh, airsoft gun, no problem? Or is it gang members, I better call the cops?
Well, in the neighborhood that I live in, I know most of the kids.
Yeah.
By sight. And so if I see them, I have a pretty good idea probably that it's an airsoft gun. So that's my first assumption. I don't call the police one way or the other. But then again, I live in in an area where we don't have.
So is that the problem here? This woman called the police without checking it out?
No, because in this day and age, if you see anybody walking with a gun that's visible, that's just the and the parents need to be telling their kids, you can't do that because someone who does not know you is going to call the police on you. And we had long lectures with my son and his friends when they were about 12 or 13, when this was very popular for them at that age. They've kind of grown out of it now at 16-ish or so. And I'm like, listen, if anybody questions you or if a police officer, don't go, sir, it's an airsoft, and raise the gun to show him. You throw your hands in the air, you drop it, and you start yelling, airsoft, airsoft, or whatever. The parents have got to teach their children that today, expect someone to call being scared because that's just where that's our reality.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm surprised the kids at the standoff I was at there in Silver Lake a couple years ago, they did not get shot because they kept trying to show the officers these guns were not real and the officers were right there.
Yeah. Don't you understand? This is not a real gun.
No, that's not the point. Yeah. You drop it and say, you know, whatever, and throw your hands. You don't show them anything.
In this case,
let it go.
In the Columbus case, the kids apparently live nearby. So the cop then talks to the mom.
I pull up on them, and I'm not gonna lie to you, doing cop stuff. I drew down on him while I'm rolling up on him in the car. He freaks out, and he starts to pull the gun out of his waistband.
He could have shot you for that. You know that?
He dropped it real fast, and I didn't know it was a BB gun until it hit the sidewalk. Regardless of what people say about the dudes wearing this uniform, okay, we care. all right? We legitimately care. I've been in the military. I've been overseas. I'm a police officer. I've had to do things that I hope that your generation never has to do. Having said that, the last thing I ever want to do is shoot an 11-year-old man. Because your life hasn't even gotten started yet. And it could have ended.
Right.
Because I wouldn't have missed. I could have killed you. I want you to think about that tonight when you go to bed. You could be gone. Everything you want to do in this life could have been over.
Close call.